Hey, 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 welcome in, email geeks. This is the Email Design Podcast, your friendly home for all things email design, development, and marketing. As always, it's your two favorite bald men hosting the podcast. I'm Kevin Mandeville.
And I'm Jason Rodriguez.
And coming at you today, we are doing another Litmus Community Rapid Fire Q&A. We're taking questions from the Litmus Community at litmus.com/community, questions that you've asked, and we're going to come back and hit you up with our take, our spin on the answers. So we're going to kick things off today from Veronica Williams asking if we can help settle a debate for her. So she's currently in the middle of a debate and she's looking for our help. What technique do you think is better for creating newsletters in an ESP for clients and or yourself? One, would you code it yourself? Or two, would you use the WYSIWYG in the ESP? And from my perspective, it really comes down to how comfortable you are with code. If you're comfortable with code and you are familiar with the email clients and the quirks of it, and you can do basic things with it, by all means, code it yourself. You're going to get a lot more freedom, flexibility, and control over it. However, if you aren't as well versed in it, email rendering can be a really messy place, really confusing place. And oftentimes, I mean, the WYSIWYG editors, the drag and drop editors, and ESPs have become so good now that a lot of them have pretty robust templates to use. You could definitely use that. And I would also say, I mean, it also depends too. Is it like just for you, or are you trying to do this for other people as well? And the expertise level of your teammates, your team members, coworkers, clients, that can really help determine which one you pick as well. What are your thoughts, Jason?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with everything you just said. You know, personally, I feel like you and I would absolutely prefer working in code because we have full control over it. We're not going to have the ESP editor, the WYSIWYG adding any extra code, messing it up, anything like that. But I do like, you know, there's a couple of newer tools out there that work well as WYSIWYG editors and like kind of split the difference between clients or marketing folks that don't have that code experience and the developers. The main one I'm thinking of is Taxi for Email, where, you know, they give you that WYSIWYG editor option. They sync with your ESP, all that good stuff. But it splits those two concerns between code and the WYSIWYG editor and keeps that code very clean, but still allows clients or, you know, copywriters, marketing people, whoever to touch that email, make updates needed and spit it out to your ESP. So yeah, totally depends. It's what you're comfortable with. It's what your team's comfortable with, what your clients are comfortable with, and how familiar with email they are.
Let me also give a shout out. My favorites as well, Stamp Ready, stampready.net has a nice drag and drop editor, WYSIWYG, really good, and befree.io as well. Yep. They got a really nice drag and drop editor, and both of those are sort of ESP agnostic. So
yeah,
along even, with Taxi
like,
as well.
Like you said, you know, most ESPs are making better editors like that too. I know Campaign Monitor has been putting a ton of work into theirs. That makes it really easy to just drag and drop stuff. It works really well and spits out pretty clean code. So yeah, just look at your team, figure out your comfortability levels with email and kind of go from there. All right, moving on. This question about Yahoo alignment issues still cropping up to this day, well, at least 8 days ago, James Vasey was having problems with Yahoo alignment and using this older kind of hack to fix Yahoo alignment issues of using the table layout fixed style property in line on the tables, but wasn't having any luck with that. You know, our friends over at Email Monks, Kevin George, replied shortly after he posted this message and showed that he was missing that align center for the TDs in his email. So I feel like that's just a good quick reminder, quick lesson to always check your code. Make sure you're using that align attribute to align things as needed, because if you're not, then things might look a little bit funky in different email clients.
Yeah. So again, that is an outdated hack at this point. Yep. Table layout fixed. You don't need it. Just make sure if you're using tables, you got to align all the things or you're not going to end up with what you're hoping for.
Exactly. Yeah. This was a great question. I had a little bit of a conversation with Mark McEwen here a little while back. He was asking about Apple Pay and mobile email and whether or not that was possible. So I was doing some research into it and I don't think it is possible. Correct me if I'm wrong, Kevin, but the Apple Pay mechanism only works in a handful of very specific web browsers if you're working on the web. So that's Safari on Mac and Safari on iOS. And it uses JavaScript to provide that functionality. And since we can't have that JavaScript in our email campaigns, there's no real mechanism for using Apple Pay in email right now. Whether or not that'll change is kind of up for debate. You know, we don't know what Apple's going to release in the future. You know, they have been making a lot of changes, a lot of improvements for Apple Pay, releasing it on more platforms. So that could improve in the future. They could have some method of using Apple Pay in an email, or at least in mail on Mac or iOS. But right now, as far as I know, no JavaScript, no Apple Pay in email.
Yeah, not possible at the moment, although I fully expect that this is going to happen someday.
At some point, yeah.
At some point, they're going to have the integrations. It'll most likely happen on mobile first. Yeah. Apple Mail will probably be left out at first, if I had to guess. But this type of integration absolutely, I think, is inevitable. It's probably just a matter of when. And if I had to make a prediction, Jason, I would actually say that Google will be the first provider to do it.
I could see that happening, yeah.
That's actually, we've already seen them doing some Google Wallet stuff with email, which we covered on a previous podcast. So if I had to get the prediction machine going again, I'd say watch out for Google being the first one.
Yeah. If you did want to hack around this, though, I mean, you could always just use a landing page. At least on iOS and Mac, you'll have access to Apple Pay on that landing page. So you could kind of fake it that way. But yeah, I could see Google doing something like that for sure pretty soon here. So we'll have to wait and see.
And nobody is looking forward to that more than Rebel.
Yeah.
Rebel will stand to benefit the most out of anybody for that type of functionality. All right. So next question here coming from Julia Marshall. She asks, how can I access any calendar via email? I want to insert a link into an email that opens up a calendar, any native calendar app on mobile or desktop, but without having a scheduled an event. Is that possible? I don't think that this is possible to just have a link to the calendar app. Now, there may be native functionality that you can have, especially on, you know, certain mobile OSs. But in terms, especially on desktop, of just having a native deep link that opens the calendar app in general, I don't think it's possible. I think what you would have to do is you would essentially have to have a blank calendar event that would then open up the calendar. You'd basically be having an ICS file that people download and then open up. That's what we've done in our campaigns. And I would sort of stand to question, Jason, what would be the purpose of having to open up a calendar? I mean, presumably you're going to have an event of some kind, whether that's an in-person event, a meeting. Why would you just need somebody to open up a calendar? I mean, unless it was some type of app integration or something you're trying to get them to install, but I feel like I'm not sure or clear on what the potential use case could be here, but I'm not sure that it's possible. You'd have to have a blank event anyways.
Yeah, the without the scheduled event thing is, yeah, the kind of the crux here. I don't understand what that would be used for. But like you said, yeah, not really possible. You've done a lot more stuff with calendars and invites than I have, so I totally trust your judgment here, Kevin.
All right, so we're going to get into a few more questions, but first we just want to let you know you can catch the podcast at emaildesignpodcast.com. Go there. All these questions are linked, past episodes, full show notes. It's all right there. Be sure to subscribe. Get the podcast as soon as it drops on SoundCloud, YouTube, and iTunes. Tweet along with the hashtag emaildesignpodcast. And we have a free 14-day trial of Litmus. Just go to litmus.com/giftcard and input the coupon code podcast. 14 days free. So you can do all of your email testing. You can test out, I guess you couldn't really test out the Apple Pay stuff, but test out your Yahoo alignment. Check it out in Yahoo Mail. You can see what your email looks like in Outlook, Gmail, iPhone, iOS. Check your links, your images, make sure nothing's broken so you have full confidence before your email goes out the door.
Yeah, something new we're going to be doing with these community episodes is highlighting a couple of new jobs from the community job board. So if you guys aren't aware, you can go to litmus.com/community/jobs, and we have tons of great companies posting email-specific jobs. So these are all email industry jobs, developers, designers, strategy, QA, copywriting, anything that touches email, some great
companies.
The only
job board on the internet that does it.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, there's other ones out there, but nothing solely focused on the email industry, and we keep it very very like clean and tight and only focus on email because that's what we love, you know. So there's a couple of great companies out there looking for some people to join their teams. King Arthur Flour, which actually sends really great email campaigns. I don't know if you're a subscriber, but they're pretty good. They're looking for an email developer that would work out of their office in Norwich, Vermont. So definitely check that one out. We'll put that in the show notes. Our friends over
at BLC is a longtime Litmus Live attendee.
Oh, nice.
King Arthur Flour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Our friends over at Rebel are actually looking for a freelance email developer to help out with their customer success team, help troubleshoot issues, stuff like that. And this is great because it's a remote job, so you could live pretty much anywhere in the world and work for Rebel, which would be awesome. This is freelance, but they did post this, you know, just a couple of days ago. So if you are interested in working with the fine folks at Rebel, definitely check that out and, you know, submit your resume, email them, and let them know what's going on. And then lastly today, our friends over at National Geographic, which I think would be so much fun to work at from an email standpoint, they're looking for a digital marketing specialist in their email marketing group. This is based out of Washington, D.C. It's full-time. It's a design role. But definitely check that out if you want to, you know, work for one of the great institutions and magazines, National Geographic.
I've never seen any of Nat Geo's campaigns.
They do some pretty good ones, yeah.
I haven't seen them, but imagine what you could do with it.
Yeah,
that would be a really
absolutely.
Fascinating brand to work with, right? Yep.
Yeah, there's just so much there you could do. They have so much imagery, so many good assets and stuff as a brand that you could do some really cool stuff with their email marketing team. So definitely check that out. Again, it's litmus.com/community/jobs. People are posting those. You know, we get a handful of them every single week. They're always changing up there. They're getting filled. So definitely act fast and get to it. So this next community question is from Marie Finnegan, posted 2 days ago, asking about that best practice of how you should handle sending, replying, that from name of your email marketing program. So she's asking whether or not, again, it's one of those longstanding debates. Should you, one, do the thing where in the email itself, you have like this email's not monitored, when you're not going to get a reply, or use like no reply at litmus.com or something like that, for example? Or two, should you have an active email account with your email marketing program where people, your subscribers, can respond, talk to support, talk to whoever, you know? So I think there's a pretty clear stance here where we will almost always recommend that second option of having that live email address. People can reply to your campaigns. They will get in touch with somebody that will respond to them in, you know, appropriate amount of time, because there's so many benefits to that. You know, it's not difficult to set something like that up. A lot of companies are using things like Help Scout or, you know, support ticket type software that you can route that email address into, so it goes right to your support team. But just having that human element behind your email marketing campaigns is just a massive, massive win. So I know I always get put off when I see somebody's from address being no reply at whatever their company is, or if they do have that messaging in there that, you know, this is an inactive email account, don't reply to it because you're not going to talk to somebody. It just seems lazy to me. You know, I think having that human element is always going to be a good one for you.
Yeah, you got to be human. You got to remember, this is one-to-one communication. Yep. You got to try to be as personable as possible. Don't be a robot. That's the number one way, I think, to really lose trust on people. And even, I mean, if you recall just on the past episode we did recently, Jason, you know, one of the number one things people are looking for in emails is good personalization. Yep. You don't want to be too creepy, but people are looking for good personalization. So, and I mean, this isn't even personalization, but it's just a simple step to make things seem more human, that you're reachable, you're open, you're transparent. I mean, those are the types of things you want to promote. And when you have a no reply, you're basically giving off the impression that you don't want to interact with your customers, which should never be the case.
Yeah, absolutely. So definitely, yeah, if you kind of have a human there, let people reply to stuff. I know we get tons of replies from our email campaigns. My personal campaigns that I send out, I get tons of replies from those. And it's just such a good way to talk to people and, you know, learn more about them, learn more about their problems, how you can help them out, and just kind of grow your audience, grow your business. And it's a great method. So moving on from that, question about image compression from Kevin Guthrie, posted about 2 weeks ago, asking what's the best method for image compression. He's, you know, right now relying on the similar method that I feel like most people are using, which is just using Save for Web and Photoshop. You know, maybe adjusting the settings there, compressing JPEGs a little bit more, but are there some best practices for compressing images for email? I think there definitely are some. Our friend Henry, who spoke at Limits Live Boston, actually chimed in, had some great advice about, maybe looking at different image formats, like you could use PNG 8 instead of PNG 24, because that will cut some of the colors and reduce that file size. He recommends never ever saving at 100% quality for JPEGs, which I would absolutely agree with, because most people can't tell the difference between something at like 60 to 80% and 100%. But I think the number one tip here is taking advantage of software or services that allow you to compress an image after you save for web from something like Photoshop. So a couple of people recommended using Image Optim, which is a program you can download for Mac. I think they might have a Windows version. I'm not sure, but I know I've been using it for years on Mac. I use that on all images that go into emails. There's some other ones. There's services like Kraken, TinyPNG. So just, twiddle around with the settings in something like Photoshop, but then it's a great, great practice to compress those images after the fact and get rid of all of the crap that image formats come with, all that metadata, so that you can keep those file sizes smaller for your subscribers.
JPEG Mini is another one. Yeah. Or as you joked in one of your blog posts, Jason, you could always use Pied Piper.
Yep.
That's a Silicon Valley reference for those who don't know. But yeah, and definitely I think being able to distinguish between when you want to use a PNG and when you want to use a JPEG is really critical, like Henri mentioned. That's going to save you a lot of file size. So JPEGs are typical for pictures, PNGs for more retina stuff. You can definitely use, as Mark Robbins had in his Litmus Live London talk, use source set to be able to progressively enhance or fall back for your file sizes, depending on what type of retina environment users may be in. And another technique too, I don't really see much of it, and honestly, I'm not even sure, I haven't done a ton of research into this, how it may be impacted, because we're just getting more and more pixels with all the devices, but there's always compressive images that you can look into as well, to where you can completely blow up an image and save it at really, really tiny quality, like 10%. So you could do it at like 4 times the size for a JPEG, save it at like 10% or whatever, and you're going to save a ton of the file size, but you're still going to retain a lot of the quality. But I'm not sure how with things like the iPhone X or whatever, how that's going to impact some things. It's sort of TBD, I guess. But it's something, another thing you could look into and research. Yep. All right, on to our final question of the day. This one is coming from us, John Galito. Identifying dynamic content in email. So he asks, does anyone have any advice on how to identify whether content in a retailer email is static or dynamically populated, i.e. via subscriber data or for individualized content and offers? For example, is there something in the email source code that would identify dynamic content? Short answer is not really. It somewhat depends. If you're using an actual dynamic content third-party service, something like Movable Ink, Live Clicker, any service like that, you would be able to detect and see that their asset URLs are pointing to their domains. So and some of them even use a particular, coding method or style that you could pick up on. But inherently, any asset that is hosted on the web is dynamic in nature. So any image that's uploaded and is linked could be changed, and therefore is thus dynamic. Any external CSS file has a link that could be updated and changed. So, there isn't a true way to determine it just looking at the code apart from noticing third-party services. I guess the other thing too is you can just look at what the actual content in the email is and make an educated guess. If you see a Twitter feed, that might be dynamic. If you see a countdown clock, that's obviously dynamic. But I think that's pretty much the long and short of it, Jason.
Yeah, totally agree. I don't think there is a surefire way of doing it. But I like the suggestion of, using your gut, look at the content. If your name's in the email, if there's something that you were looking at in a shopping cart or left in a shopping cart and you see it pop up in an email, that's dynamic. That's based on your subscriber data. It's been individualized for you. So just kind of use your gut, look at it. And then if you want to inspect the code and see if you can tease out some of that stuff. But when it comes out in the code, it's a little bit trickier.
Unless somebody wants to take the emails that come into their inbox and get the web version, host them somewhere, and track to see if anything changes. But that seems
Overkill.
Seems like quite an interesting project for that. So, all right, well, that's going to do it for this edition. Nice community edition. Again, you can go to litmus.com/community and answer questions. We have the best email geeks in the world there to help you. We cover some of the ones here on the podcast as well. So definitely check it out. You get some great help and insight there. Again, reminder, go to emaildesignpodcast.com for all episodes, all the questions we discuss here, links, it's all right there. Subscribe on SoundCloud, YouTube, and iTunes. Tweet along with the hashtag emaildesignpodcast. And don't forget, we have a free 14-day trial of Litmus. Just go to litmus.com/gift card and input the coupon code podcast to test your emails before you send. Make sure there's no mistakes and you have confidence when it comes time to hit the send button, people. Do it. See you next time. We'll be right back.